This is The Edge with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel.
All right, welcome in Friday, and a football Friday at that. We're going to have plenty of coverage, both NFL and college. But, of course, a big UFC card coming up this weekend. So in about 10 minutes from now, Reed Kuhn's going to join us, of course, of Fightnomics, author of a great book, Fightnomics, I should say, an ESPN insider. Talk a little mixed martial arts as Habib will take on Justin Gaethje this coming weekend. Chris Andrews, bottom of this hour, his biweekly spot here on The Edge. Talk a little football. And Kevin Roth, meteorologist over at Roto Grinders, is going to join us too. Discuss what could be our first winter game of the NFL season. But with that, we'll start with a quick recap of last night. A game that I guess was played between the New York Giants and the Philadelphia Eagles. 22-21, your final score. Philadelphia Eagles get a win, do not cover. That is, of course, going to the New York Giants. Eagles do get the win, which is solid. Move to 2-4-1 on the season and right up there at the top of the division in the NFC East. Now, this number was quite the story, right? Opened up 6, got down to 3.5, made its way back up to 5 where it closed here at the South Point Hotel and Casino. The total was an interesting perspective as well. I had bet this under 45, as we discussed yesterday, closed 44.5. Boy, was I lucky here, huh? How about this? A game goes under the total that between the two teams had 8 red zone possessions. Isn't that ridiculous between these two? In terms of the red zone possessions for both of them, 10. The Giants go 2 for 2. The Eagles go 3 for 8 inside the red zone. Mistakes galore. 4 total turnovers, though, between these two teams. It was just a poorly played game on both sides. Danny Jones, Carson Wentz, both looking equally awful at times. Danny Dimes, 20 of 30, 187 yards, 6.2 per attempt. 2 touchdowns and an interception. So sacks 3 times. Also had a fumble that sealed up the game. And then, of course, you have Carson Wentz, 25 of 43, 359, 8.3 per attempt, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. So, again, with Carson Wentz, we have seen his yards per attempt continue to climb game by game the last now 3 games, right? We mentioned it last show, the fact that the yards per attempt had gone up the last 2 games before last night, up at least from the first 4 games of the season. The touchdown to interception ratio had improved as well, got a little bit better here, but still throwing an interception and a bad one at that. I don't know what's going on with Carson Wentz, man, because I talked to a couple people about this on social media yesterday. Like, there are times where Carson Wentz looks god-awful when he's trying to extend plays, when he's extending said play, and then, of course, throws an interception on that and commits a turnover. But then there's, of course, the pass which he throws to essentially win the game for them, which is an absolute laser down the field to Boston Scott for 18 yards. They don't get a 2-point conversion, of course, but there are times where Carson Wentz shows his brilliance, and then there's other times where you're like, what has been going on with this guy who 2 years ago was at the top of the list in terms of MVP candidates until he tore his ACL, and the Eagles, of course, went on to win the Super Bowl that year. But regardless, despite this awful start, Eagles now in first place in the NFC East, just ahead of the Dallas Cowboys, who are sitting at 2-4 and have a big matchup with the Washington football team this coming weekend. And still then, the New York Giants sitting at 1-6, barely out of it in the race for the, to make the obvious joke, NFC least at this point right now. So for both teams going forward, obviously extended weeks and what we will see this coming week will obviously dictate a lot we're going to see going forward, but the Eagles do have a massive matchup after this and some extra time to get ready for the Dallas Cowboys. So this is going to be a massive matchup the next time we see Philadelphia, but market a little incorrect. The initial market move was correct, driving this down from 6 to 3.5, but the comeback here on the Eagles, a little incorrect there. So Philly gets the win, does not cover over the New York Giants, and as far as the Giants are concerned, worst offense in the National Football League, at least in terms of efficiency standards. If you looked at Football Outsider numbers, didn't look that much better last night against the Philadelphia Eagles. So going forward, we'll see if the Giants can improve this. Danny Dimes with the turnover issue had it again last night with the 2, and that was one of the big issues that we had talked about with Daniel Jones, and the fact that why I looked at this game under the total, because you had 2 offenses that were prone to mistakes, and you saw quite a few of them last night. Again, a game that went under the total had 10 total red zone possessions, and it still went under. So I feel like that was kind of a right side winner with that. UFC's coming up this weekend. We have UFC 254. I think we have Reed. Are we good to go or no? All right, so Reed Kuhn's nice enough to give us a couple of minutes, ESPN Insider. You can check out, of course, his book, Fightnomics, The Hidden Numbers in Science and Mixed Martial Arts, published back in 2013. And Reed, we appreciate some time. So I kind of wanted to start with some general conversation before we get into the actual fights, because I'm really curious. You know, I'm a big numbers guy. Like, I love analytics when it comes to the NBA, Major League Baseball, National Football League, becoming more prevalent. In mixed martial arts, though, I feel like people, when they hear about analytics in MMA, it feels like square peg, round hole. So I'm curious, like, the use of analytics in MMA, how is it viewed when you guys, of course, published the book Fightnomics back in 2013?
More as a passion project, to be honest. It was kind of a resume builder. I did it for fun, knowing that not a lot of fight fans would be highly analytical. So as sports go, I don't see MMA on the spectrum as like baseball, now basketball, football, even currently with analytics. So MMA is on the wrong side of that spectrum, but that doesn't mean the numbers aren't useful. There's a lot of chaos in there. There's a lot of uncertainty, but using the numbers, doing the math, using machine learning, it's still going to pay off in some respect. And the chaos is actually fine for me. I'm good with it. So the fighters themselves, it's mixed bag. Some of them love it. Some of them don't. The coaches are probably a little bit more respectful of the math than the fighters are. And that's always been the case. So, I work with who wants it. I'm not going to force feed it to anybody.
So if you go and, of course, you follow Reed on Twitter at Fightnomics, does a great job in tweeting out these Fightnomics Uber tail of the tapes. And, you know, you'll see statistics in there, you know, total knockdown ratio, distance knockdown rate, head jab accuracy, head power accuracy. Obviously, the analytics that you're using are pretty specific in terms of breaking down some of these fights. I'm curious, you know, the numbers that are widely available to handicappers right now, like significant strikes absorbed and landed, things like that you can fire up on UFC stats page. Do you find those useful in handicapping matchups?
I obviously do it at a much more granular level.
Yeah.
I'm looking at trying to break down the stand up when I think a fight is going to stay standing. And then I'm looking at ground stats when I think that there's a chance that the fight is going to spend a lot of time on the ground. Significant strike as a general metric is a roll up stat. It's encompassing everything that happens in a single round into one single number. And it does a good job of telling a broad story of who is efficient, who is effective, and who has good defense, who avoids those strikes. Unfortunately, those numbers can be biased depending on where the fight takes place. If you go to the ground, it's going to be very different than on the feet in terms of the pace and in terms of the actual connection rate. So there is a place for those numbers. When I'm storytelling, I want to tell a much more granular level of detail. And that's why I break it down into stand-up striking metrics versus ground metrics.
So let's dive into the card then. Of course, Habib Nurmagomedov, Justin Gaethje, lightweight title unification this weekend. It is center stage. So let's talk about the style of this fight, right? Because it seems pretty clear on the surface. One guy wants to just ground and pound and grind you into dust, and that would be Habib. Justin Gaethje, of course, famously wrestling background, hasn't attempted a takedown, I think, in his UFC career. So I'm curious, just before we get to the specifics of these two, when you see contrasting styles like this, is there any indication that one style usually wins out in being able to dictate the tempo and the style of the fight? Because, like, just from my memory and watching fights, it seems more times than not, the guy that wants to, like, grind you down is able to dictate his style a little bit easier than the guy who wants to force the other dude to stand up.
Yeah, it's hard to account for that in the math because we have not really seen Justin Gaethje's wrestling. He has attempted like literally one takedown and he didn't land it. So you can say he's never used offensive wrestling. He has used defensive wrestling, and that is something that gives me pause being a backer of Nurmagomedov here and his credentials, you know, being a collegiate all-star. That Justin Gaethje is bringing something to the table here that we're not really accounting for because he just hasn't used it. That is concerning. But your question about is wrestling effective? Does that sort of trump other styles? I think it does. It's hard to put a number on that, but just stylistically, when you have that threat, other people's stand-up has to account for that. You can't overcommit on punches. You can't be too aggressive because you're worried about that takedown. So even a fearsome striker changes their game because of the wrestling, even when it's not being actively used. So that's, I think that leans things towards wrestlers in general. They've always done well in MMA because they have that out. I think that's going to be useful here. I think everybody knows how this fight's going to go down. It's going to be a takedown war. And if Justin Gaethje actually stuffs some of those early takedowns, it's going to get really interesting. But the numbers tell us that Khabib is going to keep going and going and going until he gets that takedown. He's going to use this chain wrestling against the fence. He's going to lie on top of you. That's how I think this is going to go. I'm willing to have my mind blown if Justin Gaethje somehow stuffs takedowns and turns it into a striking war. I just don't expect it.
So ultimately, the result of Khabib's style here, because there's a lot of different ways to attack this, as you know, right? Khabib, to win this thing outright, minus 335. That was actually as high as minus 365 yesterday. You also have method of victory props, Khabib by submission, by decision, Gaethje, of course, KO, TKO, and all these other ways. You can also go inside the distance for either fighter. So ultimately, when you see these two, their styles, what do you think ends up in a result? I had played Khabib inside the distance at minus 110. That is now up to minus 135. Am I on the right track there?
I think so. Five rounds is a lot of time to work. Remember, he's dealing with no audience. So there's no one's going to boo him if he's just lying on top of Gaethje and setting up position advances. So that works in our favor in terms of winning rounds. Question is he going to be able to sink in a choke? Is he going to be able to get that back position that sets him up for that submission? 50-50, I think there's a decent chance he gets a choke. That's absolutely going to be his game plan, and he has 25 minutes to find it. So I would lean that way. I'm more confident just playing the side on this one, because he's also willing to just win the rounds, and he's done that before. So I'm hesitant on a totals play. I'm going to side just on Nurmagomedov one way or the other.
All right, let's go to the second bout then. Robert Whittaker, Jerry Cannonier, middleweight bout. Looked like it's pretty much pick across the board. Round prop 2.5, slightly shaded to the over, minus 115. So we know Cannonier, pretty explosive finisher. Five of his last six victories have come to a knockout or TKO. What do the numbers say about Whittaker's ability to avoid finishes here? Because three of his five losses have come via finish. Got submitted once, TKO twice. How does he match up with Cannonier here?
So striking wise, he matches up pretty well. But you pointed out an interesting point here with Cannonier. He gets an early finish. He is explosive early. If the fight gets out of the second round, he's never won ever. It's either going to a decision or he gets finished. So this guy is at risk once the fight evolves. So we got to hope that Whittaker, if you're backing Whittaker, which I am, you got to hope that he is extra careful in that first round. Now, he is a very good technical striker. He's accurate. He uses a high pace. He likes to mix up his strikes, lots of kicks, changing levels, body, leg, head. So if he's smart, he's going to keep that distance. He has been knocked out. I am worried about the chin, but he's also much younger than Cannonier. So I think that sort of evens out. The biggest concern in my book, looking at the math, I am heavily swayed towards Whittaker, but Cannonier used to compete at much higher weight classes. He was heavyweight, then he was light heavyweight, now he's at middleweight. Whittaker was actually formerly a welterweight. So you have two guys going in different directions in terms of size. It evens out in the middle. The math likes Whittaker. I'm going to hedge a little bit, just pull back my certainty a little bit because of that size. Cannonier did face basically the top several in the light heavyweight division now, guys who are champs or about to compete for the championship. So that does give me some pause. I'm backing Whittaker. I think it's the technical striking and it's his ability to fight well into the third round. I mean, he's used to five rounders. Cannonier just doesn't have that in his base to go long.
All right, third matchup on the card. This is actually one I'm really excited to watch. Volkov and Harris, this heavyweight bout. Volkov upwards of $1.85 favorite here. Round prop at 2.5, shaded to the under minus 135. Before we get to this specific fight, I'm curious your thoughts just in general when it comes to heavyweights, because, and Volkov's a good example of this. I feel like sometimes we overvalue as a market, like heavyweights and fights, and you generally see short round props shaded to the under in heavyweight bouts. Volkov's a good example because not only have his last two bouts gone to decisions like the Curtis Blade one, where it was a very big underdog to go over that prop, and that was something that I was on. Do you think we generally overvalue heavyweights going at it? And some of these guys are getting better technical striking, and you're seeing guys like Volkov who are pretty patient with their striking.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, heavyweights do have the highest finish rate in the UFC. Size does matter. Volkov is pretty patient. He's gone long rounds before. Walt Harris, maybe not so much. I mean, this has flavors of the Whitaker-Kenyon-Near matchup, where Volkov is the patient one. He's the technical striker, highly accurate in his striking. And assuming he can weather that early storm and be patient, I think he does pull this out one way or the other. But in terms of the total, yeah, that's a tougher question. Heavyweights in general, heavy on the knockout, not so much on the submissions. But Volkov, if he's choosing to play that patient game and look for deep water, he might intentionally take this into later rounds and actually be conservative up front. So again, I'm not taking the total on this one. I think this is a tricky one in terms of who's going to be aggressive first. I think Volkov should be smart by being patient, and that's why I'm going to avoid the total.
So we got 60 seconds left. Are there any fights on the card that your numbers that like really stuck out to you? Maybe one you want to watch or one we should watch out for as handicappers and viewers of the sport?
Those three are the big ones. Yeah. There's the leading off the main card, Magomed Ankalaev versus Ion Cutelaba. That's one that's been rebooked multiple times. It had a weird finish in the first one. I'm a backer of Ankalaev. His price has gotten to the point where I'm actually pausing on that one, -335. Cutelaba is still extremely dangerous, and this is one where Ankalaev has to be careful. He is clearly the superior technical striker between the two, but at light heavyweight, you don't want to take chances when those prices get that high. If you see they're at light heavyweight, but the other two heavyweight matchups, you see much tighter odds because there is always that chance where someone is going to get that one shot that knocks someone out. So I'm an Ankalaev backer. I'm not going to go crazy on it. My bigger bets are Volkov and Whitaker.
Reed Kuhn again. Follow him on Twitter at Fightnomics. Check out the book as well, Fightnomics, Hidden Numbers and Science in Mixed Martial Arts. Reed, thanks for the time, man. I really enjoy your work, so we appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
You got it. Again, at Fightnomics up on Twitter. All right, plenty of football left on a football Friday. Clip of the week when we come back. We're going to break down two games in the NFL, two Kansas City and Denver. Denver, sneaky good on defense. How do they match up with the Chiefs? All right, welcome back in. Clip of the week. Get ready for that here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. So I got a little dirty here, all right? Early in the week, I didn't. And this is reminiscent of last year when Matt Youmans, Ed Sammons both laughed at me in that dynamic matchup between the then Redskins, now football team, and the Miami Dolphins. Loved the Dolphins in that spot. What a thriller it was. What a thriller it was. I'm going ugly here again. Bet the Jets plus 13 this week against the Buffalo Bills. And that number's back down. It's sitting around 13. And Cirque even this morning had 11.5. Looks like Sam Darnold's going to play. Now, I use this to set up what we're going to talk about here in the clip of the week because Tim Murray, Matt Youmans, my guys in the desert, discussed the look-ahead line, which was posted up at the Superbook, which was Chiefs minus 21 over the New York Jets. Let's fire and hear from the guys because there's only one way to handle this, and I think it was the same way you handled this Jets-Bills game.
Jets getting 21 against the Chiefs. What does history tell us when we have these types of big spreads?
Put it all in the Jets.
Hold your nose and bet the Jets. Yeah. This is, again, I think one of the fascinating things as well, just from a gambling perspective, right? Who is watching this game other than a Jets fan and a Chiefs fan, unless you have 21 point spread to think about it, to discuss it. And we have up here the biggest spread since 1992. And Denver, I think I remember that one.
The Peyton Manning squad, yeah.
And Jaguars covered that game. Broncos minus 26.5.
Broncos struggled to win that game. I think it was a one-possession game in the fourth quarter.
Yep, right? Never a doubt for the underdog better. So, look, I think it's fascinating. It's been something we've been looking forward to for a couple weeks and kind of speculating it's going to be 16.5, 17, more. The Jets are so dreadful, but as you know, humans, 21 is a large number. We don't usually get to those key numbers, right? You know, above 17 in the NFL. 21's a big one.
Check out that chart, by the way. It's at BFOX 22 if you want to look at it. Biggest NFL spread since 1992.
Dallas came home last year That was, I think, a late cover.
That's
they,
the
they
one.
Got that against Miami.
Yep.
You're right.
And the Dolphins should have covered that.
Yeah, that was late. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And the favorites on that list, 1-5 against the spread. Like Tim just said, the Cowboys probably shouldn't have covered that 22.5.
Yeah, actually, so it's funny. I remember that Denver game. I was working over at Red Rock Casino at the time, all those years ago. I was a banquet porter. And that point spread, discussing that amongst work friends and talking about that and like being like, dude, come on, these are professionals. These point spreads, these are massive. And it's the same thing here, man. Like, it's the same thing with this week. It's the same thing next week against the Kansas City Chiefs. To me, there is no option. Like, I'd rather take 21 any single time in an NFL game than I would lay 21 points in a National Football League game. We've seen the history there, as Ben Fox pointed out, right? The six games prior, 1-5 against the spread. And this is what we talked about, right? I think I brought this up with the Jets a couple of times. You can't go 0-16 against the spread. Like, it just becomes impossible because at some point the numbers are going to get so high, you as a team have no choice but to cover. And we're starting to get that territory here with the New York Jets, right? The market guy is high as 13 here in this matchup with the Buffalo Bills. Now, ultimately, right, we always talk about change. Why do things change? Why do numbers change? What is the reasoning behind said change? The reason why the number has changed in this matchup against the Buffalo Bills down to 11.5 is because they got healthier. It's not just Sam Darnold expected to play here, barring any setback. Very important wording right there, right? Barring any setback, it's going to be Sam Darnold starting this game. It's also the fact that you get an offensive lineman, a key offensive lineman back, another body in the wide receiving core healthy as well. So not only is the power rating getting just to the point where you have no choice but to bet on the Jets here in the next coming weeks, whether it's this game or if they lose and don't cover, then, of course, next week against the Kansas City Chiefs. But at some point, right, the market's telling us the cover is coming for the Jets because the numbers are just getting so out of hand, and they're 0-6 against the spread. And not only are they 0-6 against the spread, like, they're 0-6 against the spread and not even sniffing any of these covers, which is why this mark is getting so low on them. So you can't blame them. But at the time, we talk about it all the time, right? The key phrase, buy low, sell high. Like, these next 2 weeks are the buy low moments for the Jets. And whether they're going to cover this weekend against the Bills or whether they fail, and then, of course, it's next week against the Kansas City Chiefs, it's buy low, sell high time on the New York Jets. And buying low is the time here for New York. I think this week, caught 13 early in the week and now down to 11.5. So we'll see what the Bills do. And obviously the other part of this is, and we've discussed this, I think the Bills are slightly overvalued by the market. We're talking about overall team efficiency by DVOA metrics, 19th in the National Football League. They are the team that we actually have seen the first 4 weeks of the season. It's just they've been exposed by really good teams. Don't want to lay, 11.5, 12, 13 points with the Buffalo Bills on the road, even if it is the New York Jets. All right. Speaking of the Kansas City Chiefs, when we come back, they have a matchup against Denver. We'll talk about that because Denver, not only actually pretty impressive defensively, you look at some of their numbers, they're also getting healthier on that side of the ball, which is going to be massive. And then, of course, we could take a look at Tampa Bay, Las Vegas. Of course, Raiders and media availability practice right now. So we'll see as the show goes on if there's anything coming out of Raiders camp as they get ready to host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers without potentially their entire starting offensive line. Big news. Tuesday, October 27th, we're going to be live streaming the entire Circa Grand Opening event exclusively on VSiN.com. Everything starts at 10 p.m. Eastern, going all the way through the night, leading up to the first broadcast to Follow the Money from our new studios inside the Circa Sportsbook at 7 a.m. Eastern on Wednesday, October 28th. 12 hours of live insider coverage from the Circa Grand Opening event on the 27th and 28th, all for free on VSiN.com. Join Derek Stevens, Mike Palm, VSiN team, and a guest list full of Las Vegas icons and celebrities for all the festivities starting at 10 p.m. Eastern, all for free, only on VSiN.com. All right, so we do have a little bit of news and to update the situation going on with the Las Vegas Raiders. Of course, the entire offensive line, due to a positive test from Trent Brown, had to be isolated, placed on the reserve COVID-19 list. Now, does not mean that they were forced to miss this said game, right? Just placed on the COVID-19 reserve list because of the close proximity with Trent Brown, who was a positive test. From Ian Rappaport 2 hours ago, Raiders offensive linemen on the COVID-19 list, because they are high risk, close contacts, do have a chance to play on Sunday. Sources say, though, that Jonathan Abram does not. He's listed as having contact with Trent Brown on Tuesday, would not be cleared in time. Of course, as Deshaun Reed, who works for The Athletic, covers the Raiders notes, Abram had contact with Trent Brown on Tuesday. He's not going to be eligible to return until Monday. Can't play if the game goes on as planned Sunday. And as for the offensive linemen, 5 full days in isolation, which started on Tuesday. So that would make Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday the 5th day. They would be eligible to return on Sunday. So that door is open for the Raiders to at least have 4 of their original 5 starting offensive linemen on the field here against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're at practice right now, of course, and media availability will be coming soon, so maybe we'll get a little bit more details on that. But this all coming over the last 2 hours or so out of the Raiders. So a lot more positives here for the Raiders in terms of their offensive line, and I think that's why we started to see the market correct itself a little bit here. Got all the way up to 4. For the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, now sitting at 3.5 in a lot of spots, including here at the South Point. Still plenty of 4s for you to grab, though. They're still widely available, so you can get in here on the Las Vegas Raiders if you so choose, if you think this is an overreaction. What I find interesting and what's going to happen here is what's going to happen with the total. So this is a total that I had bet under 53.5, and here at the South Point it's 53.5. Over at the Westgate, it's 52. MGM's got 53. Circa's got 52. William Hill's got 53.5. And so it's wide ranging from 53.5 to 52. And we're going to have Chris Andrews on with us in a little bit to discuss this game and many more. But I'm curious to see from his perspective if the market moved this because of the injuries, because of the COVID issues with the Las Vegas Raiders, or if this was an actual play on the under, regardless of what was going to happen. So which leads us into this. So a couple of notes here. One, if for some reason the Raiders are not going to have their starting offensive line, we're talking about Brandon Parker now on left tackle, John Simpson at left guard, Andre James at center, Patrick Omame at right guard, Sam Young at right tackle. That would be your second-tier offensive line if that is the case and all 5 have to miss this game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Not the best unit against one of the best front sevens in the National Football League. We've talked on the show a couple of times. Indianapolis Colts are not the best team in the NFL in terms of defense. Sure enough, the title of best defense in the NFL has been ripped from their hands. It is now the Tampa Bay Buccaneers who rank first in overall defensive efficiency, according to Football Outsiders. And look at this front seven from a run block, from a playing a run perspective. Buccaneers, according to Football Outsiders, just 3.21 adjusted line yards per carry, allow the least amount of second-level yards per carry, second-least open field yards per carry. They've stuffed 22% of opponents' runs behind the line of scrimmage this season. This is a matchup that I was really curious to see anyway, because this offensive line for the Raiders has been very good this year, despite the injuries and the guys moving in and out. It's essentially a matchup on strength versus strength. I had a little bit more faith in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense, and so thought that this was going to be kind of a tough spot for this offensive line in the Las Vegas Raiders, who from a statistical standpoint is interesting. We talked about this after the Chiefs game. The Chiefs game, when you watched it, their run game was effective. But from a statistical standpoint, it only averaged 3.3 yards per carry. How that plays out against a front seven like this, which is better than what the Kansas City Chiefs bring to the table, was going to be fascinating. But again, nothing really in terms of side. Look, I do think that if you're playing a side, it's Raiders plus 4 or pass, especially if you're going to start to get these offensive linemen back right in the mix, which is why it's important to follow reports and read up on things, right? We talked about the Jets game and how indications at the beginning of the week were that Sam Darnold was trending towards playing. Sure enough, he's officially announced, market corrects itself to 11.5 after the news comes out. But if you were paying attention to reports, could have kind of seen this coming. Now this is one of those where there are still 4s out there. Once it's officially announced that all 4 of these offensive linemen are available to play, because remember, Brown's not going to, I would expect this to get below that 4. So 4 still widely available. I think that would be the ceiling for this game, at least in terms of the side. Now, as far as the other matchup, AFC West matchup between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Denver Broncos, really interesting game here. Chiefs open up 8.5 with a total of 48.5. Despite the seemingly lackadaisical feeling around Kansas City, right, and the way you watch them and the way they're off, offense operates, they're performing, right? 5-1 straight up, 4-2 against the spread. They've covered 3 of 4 games. Numbers up to 9.5 here against the Broncos. Raiders game, of course, over those 4 games, alone lost straight up and against the number. The statistics are still there as well, right? Like, to me, when I watch the Chiefs, I see a disjointed offense that doesn't look as explosive as it did a year ago, especially when they got to the postseason or the MVP year of one Patrick Mahomes. They rank second in overall offensive efficiency, best passing attack in the league, according to Football Outsiders, only 15th in rushing, which is surprising given the two big games for Clyde Edwards-Helaire when it came to the Texans win and, of course, the win we just saw over the Buffalo Bills. But how this matches up with a defense like Denver's is fascinating because Broncos, sixth right now in overall defensive efficiency, they've been really good against the run in the past, fifth and ninth, respectively, as a team. 31.07 yards per drive, 1.8 points per drive on the season. They're seventh in pressure percentage, which is a quarterback pressures per dropback. And the pressure thing is massive, right? Because it was a massive factor in what the Raiders did against Mahomes, moving him off his spot, hunting him down when he's scrambling around. They weren't containing him. They were just going after him and forcing him to throw multiple balls across his body. And while he, of course, is very good at that sort of thing, it's not something you want to regularly rely on if you're an offense of the Kansas City Chiefs. The Raiders did a great job of that in the second half, and the Broncos are capable of doing that going forward. And the big thing for Denver, too, is they're getting healthy, not only defensively, but offensively as well. On defense, A.J. Bouye is going to be back in the secondary. It looks like DeMarcus Walker back along at defensive end. On offense, Noah Fant, K.J. Hamler, both could be back as well. Looks very likely. So it could be like an all-hands-on-deck type deal for the Denver Broncos. Which kind of leads to me, at least, the biggest question. Like, I would rather have the Broncos in this situation catch a 9.5, and especially if he gets to 10. I have faith in Denver showing up defensively. I have no idea what I'm getting out of Denver offensively, and that's what leaves me pause. Drew Lock comes back against New England. Broncos still outgained in terms of yards per play, 5.1 to 4.7. Lock was 10 to 24, 189, 7.9 per attempt, which is fine, but zero touchdowns, two interceptions, and a fumble. Kansas City, 10th most efficient defense in the NFL, and they could pressure the hell out of opposing quarterbacks. We're talking about fourth in blitz percentage, and overall pressures, third in hurry percentage, quarterback knockdowns, 17th in actual sacks. So overall, lean here is to the Broncos, but I just don't have enough faith in the offense where I'm going to sit back and have confidence. If it gets to 10, I might be in here because I do like what Denver brings to the table defensively. Chris Andrews, he's going to join us next. He'll give us the update from his perspective on this Buccaneers-Raiders situation, where the number might go, and much more as we check in behind the book when we come back. If you're a horse racing fan, First Bet is the place for you. It's the easiest way to bet on your favorite sport with secure payments, attentive customer service, and a reliable website, all brought to you by ExpressBet. Sign up using promo code Vegas500 today. Get a $10 free bet instantly. Plus, receive up to a $500 bonus for wagering your first 30 days. Visit first.com/bet for more information. That's 1st.com/BET. Promo code Vegas500. Let's head out. Bi-weekly spot here with Chris Andrews, man, behind the counter at the South Point Sportsbook here at the tip of the strip. Chris, always good to talk to you, sir. So let's start with, I think, kind of the headliner, right, especially out here in Vegas. Raiders, Bucks, first off, for those who are watching and listening, then it gets flexed into the afternoon spot. Now it's going to kick off at, 1:25 p.m. Or 1:05 p.m. Pacific time, because they don't want to risk a game having to be postponed. So here's my question for you. Look-ahead line over at Westgate for this one was pick. Reopens mostly everywhere at 2.5, including your book actually opened up 3. So here's my question. The move to 3.5 and ultimately to 4 in a lot of spots, was it starting to move towards Tampa Bay before this COVID news came out, or is this adjustment all because of what's happening with the offensive line?
Strictly what's happening with the offensive line. As a matter of fact, we had the sharp money was on the Raiders. We use everything at 11 and 10 at South Point, but I was starting to see predominantly 3 even or 2.5 with juice on the favorite. I was ready to go to 2.5, and then all of a sudden, you know, the money started coming in, and that's when we knew something was wrong. And, your first assumption these days is COVID, and that obviously is what it was, you know. So then we scratched the game after that. But we had quite a bit of money on the Raiders +3. So we're not in terrible shape with the game, but we got it off the board right now.
So I'm curious your thoughts. So you have it off the board right now. Reading between the lines with the reports coming out, Ian Rappaport, Tashaun Reed, other guys around the franchise, it looks like there's a pretty good shot four of these five offensive linemen are going to be eligible to return on Sunday, obviously with negative tests pending here. If that is the case, what do you think the adjustment is? Do you think we're going to get back down to 2.5 considering the action early and then, of course, the news that these guys are going to be healthy?
I think we'll probably start back off at 3 and see where they want to go from there. And by the way, I just looked at my charts. We were at 2.5 for a little while. So they took the 3 and we went down to 2.5 and they did start laying it back. Now at first laying it back, I'm not sure if that's part of the COVID or just guys playing that little 2.5-3 game with us, you know, it might be that. But after that, they laid 3 and then they were starting to lay 3.5 and we said, okay, something is definitely up. But my opinion is I'll start back at 3 and see where they want to take me from there. Because I really think the Raiders have played very well. Yep. I mean, this is a pretty good team. Now, how this affects them, I honestly don't know. You know, it might have a very detrimental effect on them. You know, JVT, I'm not good with the names. Who's the one safety that looks like will not play for the Raiders?
Jonathan Abram, their second-year guy.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so looks like he will not play. I don't know if he means anything to the number, but it is just one more indicator.
All right, last one on this before we move off of it. So I'm curious, the market's been pretty, there's a pretty wide variance, I shouldn't say wide, but a 1.5-point difference on the total for some shops. 52 on the screen at some places, 53.5 at others. Were you seeing any money here on the total whatsoever?
Let me look. JVT, I don't even think I have $1,000 bet on the total. Okay. So, no, I'm not a good indicator with the total. Not at all.
All right. I was also asking selfishly because I bet this under 53.5, and I was wondering if smart people were on that side or if I was just a clown.
Not yet.
All right, let's move on near the top of the rotation. A game that you and I discussed, Chris, at the beginning of the week. I did nab 13 because the rumblings were there that Sam Darnold might be healthy.
Yeah.
Now we're looking at 11.5, and even over at DraftKings, we're as low as 10.5. Where do you think this number ends up? We get to Sunday, and the public's still like, screw it, Sam Darnold sucks, we're laying this. We're going to get it back up near 12.
Well, I'll tell you what, there is a couple wise guy groups out there, and they have no shame. They'll play whatever they think is the right side and a good number. And I don't think they're going to come on the Bills. I would highly doubt it, because I don't think they're going to get much better than what you got right now. Now I'm at 11.5. I wound up taking some money early on the Bills, quite a bit, actually. But now it's coming back on the Jets. So right now, let me just see where I'm at with this game. I'm almost dead even on the game. Naturally, the public's on the Bills. The sharper guys are on the Jets. So I guess, would that make you feel good, JVT? I guess it should, because they've been pretty tough so far this year.
It does make me feel good. Let me ask you, what's your general thought on the Bills? Because I've been kind of low on them. I've been kind of like, 4-0, fool's gold. Schedule hasn't been that strong. Allen still got the turnover issue. There's been issues that we have seen despite the wins. Now they've lost two straight. What's your personal thought on the Buffalo Bills?
Well, I think I talked to you about this earlier in the week. One loss, in the NFL, I mean, come on. Every team loses a game. Two losses in a row, though. And that second loss was a very, very big game for them. I think now we got to start looking at some things. And, traditionally, the way teams climb in the NFL, and there's always exceptions, but usually it's two steps up, one step back, three steps up, two steps back. That's the way it is. They did take their two steps forward last year, and I think we were highly expectant of them to be really one of the upper echelon teams in the AFC. But the AFC is really strong, and right now they look like one of the good teams. But I'm certainly not ready to put them up, with Kansas City or the Ravens or the Steelers or the Texans. There's a lot of better teams. There's a lot better teams in the AFC.
Yep. All right, let's stay in the division then. We're going around the AFC East, it looks like. But let me ask you this. San Francisco, New England. Chris, I talked to humans about this yesterday. To me, this screams buy low spot for New England. Market got burned last week because they overreacted with the Miami loss for the 49ers. Now they're in here after the Patriots lost to the Broncos. I got you guys sitting at 244.5. Where did this number end up in your opinion? Because it doesn't look like the market wants any part of the Pats.
Well, I would take issue with that. Right now, I'm looking. We have... actually, they did take 2.5 pretty strongly off us with the 49ers. But I had some sharp guys that also laid the 2.5. Now, I am a 2, so they did get overcome by the 9 or betters. But, you know, I think this is a really big game for them, yep. You know, a big game for Cam Newton. I think right now there's some questions, and some of them are pretty legitimate as to whether does he have it, because he certainly did the first couple games, and then the last couple games not so much. Now, their practices were greatly interrupted, and, you know, Belichick is known as getting the most out of his players with very tough practices, and I don't think he had a chance to do that. So, you know, that's a very open question right now. But I think you are right. You are buying very low on the Patriots. And I think we talked about this earlier, too. My power ratings on the Niners have been all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're a good team, but they had so many injuries to really key players. You know, they're a mystery team to me. You know, I think I made the number right about where it is right now. But, you know, I think this is a big game for both teams. I really do. I think Garoppolo got to play well, too.
Speaking of a big game, your Steelers got one taking on the Titans. What's your read here? Because we've seen a flip of the favorites.
Well, I do Gil Show on Monday, and the opening number that I saw around town was the Steelers 2.5. And I said, that's way too high. This game really should be much, much closer to pick. And it didn't take long for us to get there, and we ran it to Titans 1. You know, you're shaving it pretty close either way. I'm not sure the number's going to come in to influence the outcome at all at this low of a number. But I think we are getting a sense of you know, the value of the two teams. And I think they're very evenly matched. You know, Henry, of course, could be a huge difference maker. Quarterbacks look like they're probably, you know, about equal, I think, right now. The Steelers look like they probably have a little bit better receiving core, and the defenses. You know, Steelers get a lot of publicity with that defense, but Tennessee's is pretty good too. So I'm really looking forward to this. I think it should be a hell of a game.
Yep. Pittsburgh again, catching one, total 50.5. Was it sharp money driving down this total? Because it opened 52.5. It's down to 50.5.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. I think they're looking at, you know, two defensive teams. Very easily could be playing for a home field once the playoffs come. And I think that, you know, two defensive-oriented teams, I think two defensive-oriented coaches. So I think both those guys are going to want to play it pretty close to the vest. So I can understand the feelings on this.
All right, before we had you on, I was discussing and making the case for Denver, and I'm not really in at 9.5. I'm hoping to get to 10, and then maybe I'll come in on the Broncos. So two-part question. Do you think it gets to 10? Because you guys opened 9 and are sitting at 9.5. The other part is, again, probably sharp money, I would assume, but this total opened 48 at your shop, actually 48.5, down to 45.5, Chris.
It's a lot of sharp money. Yep. Yeah, all on the under. But conversely, we have all Chiefs money. I mean,
right.
I'm looking, my God. I mean, yeah, I only have like a little over $1,000 on the Broncos. So I think there's a pretty good chance we get to 10. I think you and I talked about this earlier. I kind of was making some notes along the way here. I think about 2 weeks ago, I made a note on the Broncos. Like, I think they're going to be a good team or make the playoffs or even make a playoff run. But I think they're going to be the kind of team it was starting to show some improvement and will be a good team to catch a lot of points with. I think they'll cover some numbers. I hear you're getting 9.5 and maybe even 10 eventually at home in a division game. I think this is very right to take the dog here. This is one of the games that I really like. I like Denver here. I think they cover this number.
Yep, I'd be in agreement there. All right, Chris, we're up against it. Always good to talk to you, sir. You have a good weekend. Thank you.
Yes, sir. You too, JVT. Good luck.
Yeah, thank you, man. South Point Sportsbook Director Chris Andrews, always nice enough to give us a couple minutes twice a week. We are nice enough and blessed to have the presence of Chris Andrews on the show to make it just a little bit better because we know it's bottom of the barrel. All right, when we come back, a second hour, plenty left to get to here. A lot in terms of college football analysis there. Don't worry. We did not forget Game 3 of the World Series later tonight. Dodgers, Rays, Bueller, Morton. We'll get into analysis on that and a lot more in the world of college football before we get you out of here. Remember, Kevin Roth, meteorologist, Roto Grinders, give us a preview on one of the winter games coming up this weekend. Ooh, which one is it? No.